Welcome to the Film for Fans podcast, the podcast from movie fans for movie fans. I am your host, Ryan Dunleavy. That is my co-host, Rob Dunham.
I am here.
He is here. Sorry, folks, about the breaks in the podcast. It's been a Christmas, New Year's, schedules, crazy.
Yeah, life.
Life.
Family.
Yeah.
Friends.
Kids.
Job. Bands. Sickness.
Running.
There's a lot of things.
There's a lot of.
I spent a lot of money going
on. There's a lot of stuff.
No, cars have gone on fire in the last month or so.
Yes, yes, that is. Yeah, that is good. It's very good. Don't want that to happen again. That is not a joke.
That's actually happened. Once in a lifetime experience on that one.
Yeah, once in a lifetime of having your car catch on fire is quite enough.
Engulfed in flames.
Yes, watching it. Yeah,
like, you don't want to actually be a part of something that feels like it's in a movie.
No.
Really think it's fun.
No. I know. But this is not an arson podcast or other sort.
Shots fired.
Yeah. Is there an allegation?
On to you.
Right. Okay. It is a movie podcast, and we've got a very special episode for you. Our episode today is exclusively going to focus on our top 10 movies from 2021.
Because at least 10 movies came out this year.
There might have been 10 good movies.
I'm not even sure about that.
On my list, I came up with 9 that I was actually like wanted to put on the list. And then it was like, okay, which one of the middling movies do I finish out the top 10? But so there's that. But we will get to that in a moment. Yes, we have our top 10 list. So how are we going to do this today? Is we will do, we'll talk a little bit about our general thoughts on the box office this past year. We'll do our honorable mentions. We'll do our top 10 list. We might even do our caveats before the top 10 list because both of us have movies that we think may be on our list that we did not quite get to see yet. And then we will do our dishonorable mention at the end. One or two movies that offended us this year. And it's terrible.
There's at least one that we can agree on.
Yeah. And if you're a dedicated follower of the podcast, you might be able to
figure out. We might have had a full episode about it.
Yeah. It's about us for sure.
Early in the year. All right.
Let's, without any further ado, 2025 was what type of year for movies for you, Rob?
Mediocre.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, I still had 19 movies that I liked. Mm-hmm. That me liking them doesn't mean they were great movies.
Yeah.
Because I liked them or aspects of them.
Sure.
The reality is that the broad spectrum of movies that I saw this year, it was not very good. There was probably only 2 to maybe 3 that I would say that I loved, that I would give 4.5 or higher. Mm-hmm. Stars out of 5. Maybe even 4 stars out of 5. And that's not great for a year at the box office. There are a lot of movies that I saw this year that I was just like, this, that not enough was done to make this a quality movie.
Yeah.
And there were a couple that I was very disappointed in. Talk about that later.
Yeah.
And some that I was hoping for a little more.
Mm-hmm.
From that didn't happen. I was pleasantly surprised by a couple of them. They'll be on my list, and I'll explain why. But overall, I felt it was a down year.
Yeah,
for movies, and overall, it's kind of a downward trend over the last 2 years, which I find discouraging and worrying. But you know, every once in a while, there's a movie like the Dune movie or a couple movies this year that. Raise my spirits and make me remember why I love going to movies.
Yeah.
Probably be seeing a movie tonight that's probably not going to be that great, even though I'm hoping it's going to be good.
Yeah.
So this is, we'll see what this next year brings, but 2025.
Yeah. I feel very much the same way. This year, the movies that, most years, even years where I thought overall the box office was really down and there wasn't a lot of great movies, there were still several movies that I'm like, this is spectacular. This movie is amazing. I love this movie. This movie is incredible. There were very, very few movies that I went like, wow, that movie was amazing. That movie was incredible. Like the ceiling was so low on the movies this year. And that was really surprising to me because coming off of, you know, writer's strike and things like that, I really was anticipating that the backlog of movies, we were going to get a lot of good movies. It just never happened. Like there was many weeks this year. This is not an isolated incident where I'm like, I'm going to go to a movie this weekend. I look in the box office. I'm like, nothing in there interesting.
Yeah.
Nothing. And that's shocking to me as someone who will go to see a wide variety of movies and loves going to the movies. And I want to, and there's nothing worth it in there for me. And that happened numerous times for me this year. And that's just, I don't understand that. I don't understand the lack of quality movies that were put out this year. Just, yeah, it really surprises me. And, you know, I think we're going to get a bigger 2026. I mean, you have some franchise movies coming out, but the franchise movies are kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
As well. So franchises are not doing as well. They're not coming up with a lot of originals.
If you don't have like a separate, lesser popular subgenre that you're interested in for me or I'm interested in. So there are some movies on my list that like I want to see because of that and ended up really liking.
Yeah.
If you don't have something like that, then like there's just not like the blockbuster wasn't there this year.
Yeah. And I tend to like the fall tends to yield a lot of like really high quality dramas. But that they're few and far between.
Yeah.
Like those smaller movies that don't make a ton of money, but that are really quality. Like those are out the window. Even those like crazy indie movies that sneak up on you for box office stuff, those are gone. Like a couple years ago, you had the one about the Holocaust, Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
And then you had the one about the, now I'm blanking out on titles all of a sudden. The same year, there was another one. It was a foreign film about, a woman who's accused of killing her husband.
Oh, The Fall.
The Fall. Yeah. Yes. Both of those were kind of indie. They kind of had releases, but picked up steam and they were good dramas and those sort of things. Like there wasn't even like that for the most part. There wasn't even a lot of those this year. So yeah, overall, I gotta say, do better, Hollywood. Do better.
Come on. They're starting to listen to us.
Well, I mean, the reach of this podcast, like,
yeah,
you know, the execs are sitting there waiting for this to come out to see what we think about this.
What?
All right. Well, that's our little bit of a rant on the state of the box office right now. We can hope for better in the next year, ideally. But what do you want to do? Do you want to do caveats first? Or do you want to do honorable mentions first?
Yeah, I think we should just say that before we mention any movies, either Robin or I have seen one battle after another.
Yeah.
It's being very highly reviewed and up for a lot of awards. So it's the kind of movie I feel like if I did see it, it would probably be on my list. So I just want to say that before we mention anything so no one, you know, tears their clothes, puts on all the dishes.
Yeah.
Goes wailing in the streets.
The reality is, as much as we've been moaning the quality of movies, sometimes just by nature of schedules and other things to do, we just miss some.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing with One Battle After Another was how long it was. It was very difficult for me to try and find a time to go see it in theaters.
Yeah.
Just given how the length of it. So it is something I'm going to review before my written top 10 list comes out, along with Sinners. Sinners is the other one. I'm literally halfway through the movie and trying to catch up on that one, but I can't accurately weigh it
just
until I
the
finish
nature
it.
Of things, my kid being a little older, I've opportunity to go to movies more often than Ryan does. So I probably went to somewhere over 30 movies this year in the theater, just by virtue of having the ability to do that with my time and everything. But it's got to be selective.
And one of the other caveats for me was I did a significantly more running this year, and I started running like at 6 a.m., which means like I have to go to bed earlier. So I can't go to a 9 o'clock movie that's 3.5 hours long because I'm not going to be able to get up to run. Yeah. So like just different things like that. But I will catch up in one battle after another and finish Sinners before my written list comes out. So those are our caveats of movies that are expected to do well.
I did not see Avatar Fire Action, possibly a Mando sound.
Yeah. There's almost no way I would consider giving that an honorable mention, but we've covered that ground already. My personal animus for Avatar is well known. So those are our caveats. We will get to some of those movies, and that may change our list or may not. Now, let's move into our honorable mentions. How many honorable mentions do you have, by the way?
Nine.
Okay. I do not have as many. So we'll do half one for you, then we'll do mine, and then we'll do second half for yours.
I'll go with five of mine.
You just want to do five altogether, sure. Or do you want to do all nine?
I can do them all if you want.
All right. Yep. So let's do five, and then I'll do my five, and then we'll go from there.
All right. So I will highlight, let me see here. I will highlight, Love Hurts.
Yes.
Kiyi Kwan, about a guy who's a real estate broker who actually used to be a hitman brother. Mm-hmm. But there was a whole bunch of, it's all out of mention list just because I thought it was a cool, different storytelling method. And, it also the property that was hilarious.
It wasn't a great movie, but it was fun.
Yeah.
It was.
You got to see Marshall Lynch testable Kiyi Kwan, which are probably his stunt double. Let's be honest.
Yeah, let's be honest. That would not go well.
I would not want Marshall Lynch tackle me ever. I'm gonna mention K-pop Demon Hunters.
Okay,
from Netflix. Right. Mainly because my kids like really into this movie, and I saw it a couple of times. And I gotta admit, it's got really good music.
I like it.
Got a pretty decent story. The animation is pretty good. So for a Netflix release, I thought it was well done. I will say along that same line for animated, probably my I don't have any animated movies in my top 10. No, so my favorite animated movie of the year was probably Zootopia 2.
Man.
Really good writing, some very funny, unique takes on things, some twisted takes, like things you're not expecting.
Yeah.
To happen. Also, Kiyi Kwan is one of in Zootopia 2.
No.
So he's pretty prominently here. I'm going to give Fantastic Four First Steps a mention for my album mention, just because I thought it was executed about as well as you could for a different take on that story, which they've been really struggling to come up with a good version of the Fantastic Four. And I thought it was my favorite version of Fantastic Four to this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was a great movie, but I think it was better than what they tried before. And I really like the retro futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
Aspect of it. And then the last one I'll say, just because it was absolutely insane, was The Monkey, you know, earlier this year. Based on a Stephen King short story, and Osgood Perkins movie about toy monkey that you wind up, and after you wind it up, it kills a person. So it's probably a good idea to not wind it up with people.
Probably.
Do.
Yeah.
And some of the just sheer lunacy, over the top nature of the deaths, most of the videos. It was comical.
Yeah.
Initially, it was very dark comedy, but also horror movie. So it kind of fit in with the kind of stuff I like.
Nice.
So those are a few of my honorable mentions.
So I'll give you mine. And these are not in this any order. The honorable mentions are not in any order. Now You See Me, Now You Don't, the third installment of that series. It was one of those where I enjoyed it. It was entertaining. It wasn't a great movie, but I enjoyed it and it was entertaining. So, a lot of like the honorable mentions and even into my top 10 fall into that category. They're not great movies, but they were solid enough that I enjoyed them and liked them. And that's the nature of this year's box office. Mm-hmm. It's like those movies usually don't get on this list. But
the bar is low.
The bar is low. Yes. So Now You See Me, Now You Don't. The Housemaid. I did see that one. Interesting psychological thriller. I did enjoy it. It's not anywhere as good as my memory today is not doing great. With Rosamund Pike and Ben Affleck, the David Fincher film. I keep wanting to say Gone Girl. Gone Girl. It has a similar vibe to Gone Girl. Not as executed nearly as well because David Fincher didn't direct it.
Mm-hmm.
But It had a similar vibe to that, which I enjoyed. So The Housemaid, The Accountant 2 is on my honorable mentions. Again, not as good as the original Accountant. I really like the original Accountant. This one lacked some of the depth of the relational depth and the meaning of the first movie, but it was enjoyable. Good Fortune, the Aziz Ansari and
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. Movie was I really enjoyed it. It was fun. I mean, it's economically illiterate, but it's fun. It's fun, and I enjoyed the characterization. I really enjoyed Keanu Reeves in that movie. I thought he was really good. And then Wake Up Dead Man is actually on my honorable mentions. It was back and forth whether it slipped into the end of the top 10 or not, but I think there was just enough things that annoyed me about it that it pushed it just below. But it was very thought-provoking, and there was lots of we had good discussion around that movie. So maybe I'll rethink that one. But right now, Wake Up Dead Man is in my honorable mentions.
All right.
You got more of your honorable mentions?
So I also had Captain America, Brave New World.
In.
Very much just like, because it was not a terrible, well, movie. There have been a lot of terrible horror movies.
There have been lately, yeah.
I had Weapons.
In.
Which was an interesting take on storytelling from different perspectives all coming together into one storyline, which I really like when they do that kind of thing. And they did it probably the best that I've ever seen in a horror movie and one of the better versions I've seen of it any movie.
Yeah.
So I really liked that when you got like for story from the perspective of like four different people and they don't explain why they're connecting until they all connect.
Yeah.
Then you're like, oh. Wicked for Good. Obviously, the first Wicked was number one on my list. This one was not. Number one on my list, it was not as good. It's a very different story because it's a very dark second act.
Yeah.
So I wasn't expecting it to be like the first one. And obviously it didn't do as well in the box office as the first one.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised by any of that. And then I have any more. Black Phone 2. Also had on my list. One of my favorite scary movies in the year. I thought it was at least as good, if not better, than the original. The way he displayed what happens in dream space, because all the scenes that were in dream space happened with like a scratchy record sound in the background.
Okay.
The picture got all like distorted, like you're looking through old film screen, kind of. So I like sometimes when they give you hints like that, or this is what's happening right now.
Yeah.
So you don't have to guess.
Yeah.
Not quite good enough to make my top 10.
Yeah.
So those are my honorable mentions, I believe.
Okay.
My dishonorable mention for the year was Mickey 17.
Ah, yes. Mickey 17. Yes.
Which we talked extensively about Mickey 17 when it came out, and I'm still upset.
Well, it's twofold for me. One, it was the anticipation. We really, really wanted this movie to be good. We really were looking forward to it. It seemed like it had an interesting premise. And so like it was twofold. Like one, it was just a terrible movie. It really was. It was a terrible movie. But on top of that, it's on top of the expectations of looking forward to it and really wanting to enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, it had, we thought, great director, great actors.
Yeah.
We know how to get out of their characters. Looks like a cool sci-fi premise.
Yeah.
The trailers made it seem like the writing was pretty good.
Yeah.
And none of that was true. I probably have never been more disappointed as far as my expectations versus reality.
Yeah.
In a movie. So.
Yeah, it's up there for me. I'll just run my dishonorable mention because I knew it was going to be Mickey 17 for you.
Yeah.
My dishonorable mention was Honey, Don't.
Yeah.
Like, not that I had high expectations for it, but that movie just annoyed me and I thought it was stupid. And those two have combined for a couple of other movies. Margaret Qualley was involved in a couple of those movies. I now have no intention of going to see them. They were initially interesting to me. But yeah, no. Sorry. No. So those are dishonorable mentions. Mickey 17, Honey Don't. All right. Now we get to the moment where we break into our top 10 movies of the year. we can take a little more time on these. We'll do 10, 9, 8. We'll do three at a time. What you got, Rob?
Number 10 for me is the remake of Anaconda.
Which
is not really a remake. It's about a group of friends remaking Anaconda.
Yeah.
And it's number 10.
I have not. No.
So the reason why it's number 10 for me is because it's one of the only real comedies
that came out
this year.
Yeah.
And that alone put it on my list because we just don't have that.
Yeah. Comedy. Anymore,
especially like friend comedies.
What happened to you?
Yeah. Like it is. And it was refreshing to see. I mean, there were certainly serious parts, but the over-the-top nature of what they did fit in line perfectly with the original.
Yeah.
For me, the humor was like sometimes absurd. Like at one point, the guy has to pee on another guy because he gets bit by a spider. And he's like, I can't pee in public. You know that about me. And like, there's this whole thing. But then, like, I also like some of the deadpan humor, but probably my favorite line in the entire movie is they accidentally killed the snake handler snake. Like, the snake handler has an anaconda they're eating. They accidentally kill it. It's a smaller one, obviously. But and he comes in like, hey, man, I'm really sorry that I just want to say again, I'm sorry. But I lost some meat. Close to me once too, so I know that's like, and the guy goes, was it a snake? He goes, no, it was just a person. like Paul Rudd, like you can picture Paul Rudd delivering that line. And
yeah,
I have. So I really thought it was funny and you laugh a lot, which I want.
Yeah.
Number 9 for me is Tron Ares.
Okay.
Tron Ares, especially in the theater, was an
experience.
There are very few movies I would say you shouldn't have watched in the theater. Tron Ares is one of the ones you should have watched in the theaters because we talked about this when we came out. The soundtrack was assaulting.
Yeah.
In a way that was enjoyable. That makes sense. Like it was very up in your face. The movie felt very much like pedal to the floor throughout. There was very little downtime in the movie. And I thought they did a good job of executing that style without being so egregiously overdone. And as I said, when we reviewed it earlier, Jared Leto was really good in this because he was not trying to overact. I felt like he was trying to be the person.
Yeah.
And he was a lot better at that than going crazy method.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's one of the things.
Mm-hmm.
My number 8, number 8 for me was The Housemaid. I really liked the story. I liked the combination of suspense, thriller. There were some horror elements to it, but I would definitely classify it more as a suspense thriller. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of some of the 90s suspense thriller movies where you got that unfolding storytelling style.
Yeah.
I really liked. And I like that you think one thing is happening and it's turned
down
itself.
Do you agree with my
spoiled because I had not read the book first?
Yeah, I've not either.
And the book apparently has sold millions of copies. So a lot of people in the theater.
They knew that.
I was the only guy when I stood up at the end of the movie, so I felt very
I think I was one of the only people in the theater when I saw it.
How the story developed.
Do you agree with my Gone Girl reference?
Yeah.
How it kind of flips the story on its head. Yeah.
So those are my 10, 9, 8.
Okay. Number 10 for me is Ballerina, the offshoot of the John Wick franchise. Not quite as good as the best of the John Wick movies, but Ana de Armas is awesome. And you got to see a larger scope of that world unfold. Of course, it has the amazing music and the lights and the cinematography. Some really, really cool snow battle sequences towards the end of that movie. Yeah. There were some really, really cool action moments to this. So Ballerina sneaks in number 10 for me just from the visual aspect of these are awesome visual films, the John Wick franchise films. And so I was glad that Ballerina was a quality film for me on that front. Again, not quite as good as the best of the John Wick, but a really solid movie. And Ana de Armas, I think, held her own as as the lead in that particular one. Number nine for me was Fantastic Four First Steps. I was duly impressed with this movie. I actually really liked almost all aspects of it. I think it had depth, it had character building, it had real moments. The only kind of negative was the nebulous, like, big bad was not great. It was just insert generic bad guy here.
Yeah.
There was nothing to him whatsoever.
Yeah, we talked about how he was kind of more of like placeholder for,
yeah.
We're just setting this version of the Fantastic Four up for what they're actually going to have to do. So this guy doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Overall, like, that was a minor negative. What was otherwise a very good film. I think Pedro Pascal is in way too much and gets way too much credit. however, like, this film was quite good. So I was duly pleased with watching Fantastic Four First Steps. Number eight for me coming in is Black Bag. Did you see Black
Bag? I did not.
It's quite good. Cate Blanchett and
Hemsworth.
No, not Hemsworth. Why? I will get back to you on this because I'm blanking out on actors' names. My memory is not good today. But it's a spy. It's like an intelligence agency spy thriller, and it was really quality. It was interesting. It was engaging. The one downside is if you're not super familiar with, like, computer technology, some of the terminology is going to be a little bit of a challenge to you because it does get into heavy like computer lingo. But it was suspenseful. There were some interesting moments, some interesting combinations, and character moments. Michael Fassbender. That's the guy I'm thinking about. Michael Fassbender, Cate Blanchett. So if you like spy thrillers, if you like kind of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy type movies set in a more modern setting, it's a quality spy film. I very much enjoy it. All right. 7, 6, 5.
Number seven for me was Begonia. Jesse Plemons, Adam Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys, a guy and his cousin, who come to believe that the head of a major corporation is in fact an alien, and they kidnap her and torture her and try and get her to admit she's an alien, and it's absolutely off the rails and really insane and stupid. You can't really say a whole lot about this movie without giving away what happens. So I'm just gonna say, if you like absurd comedy, you should definitely watch Begonia. I was curious last night, so I looked up what genre AI actually said Begonia is.
Mm-hmm.
And it came back with dark comedy as like the top genre with elements of sci-fi and thriller and suspense as well. So it definitely was not a horror movie, but it's wild.
Yeah.
It's wild. Like the lengths the characters go to try and prove what they're thinking or believing, and some of the stuff that happens is just kind of like, oh, wait, what? It's great. Number six for me is Thunderbolts.
Okay.
Asterisk, the new Avengers. Because everybody knows that now. Which I was very disappointed. I will say I was very disappointed with the marketing campaign for Thunderbolts.
Mm.
That immediately, like the week after it came out, they were putting up posters and said new Avengers.
Sheesh.
Because like that's the whole point of the movie. It's like you don't know that until...
Yeah.
I really like Sebastian Stan as the Winter Soldier. He gets a lot more airtime in this movie. I think he's one of the stronger characters in the Marvel Universe. So I liked watching him. And David Harbour is, I think, quite funny as the Guardian. Like, he's really good in that role. Yeah. It suits him. That's what I talk about.
And it's such a different role for David Harbour, too, with the Russian accent and stuff. Yeah, it's good.
So I liked it. I thought it was one of the better written Marvel movies just for the uniqueness of the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much liked everything about it. I liked it more than Fantastic Four.
Mm.
So that's why it's higher
on the
list of Fantastic
Four. Sure, sure, sure.
Number five for me was Drop.
Mm.
Drop was a movie that took me by surprise.
Yeah.
I'd say. very cool take on the like hostage slash crime scenario where the mom has the son kidnapped and then she's getting airdropped messages and videos the whole time she's at dinner.
Yeah.
On a date with this guy, and he's telling her to do this or do that to make sure that her son's okay, and don't know who in the room it might be. And side note, the waiter who like serves them the whole time.
He is hilarious. He's so funny. Yeah.
And I thought there was a lot in the movie to appeal to a lot of different demographics. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was, I would say the same thing I said about The Housemaid, that it felt a lot more like a 90s thriller,
mm-hmm.
like yeah. the story unfolded. It was I didn't consider it a scary movie.
No.
It was definitely more suspense mm-hmm. movie about like, what would you do in this scenario? And it's like, in our world, it's like, it would be pretty wild, but it's a realistic, like yeah. it could happen scenario. Mm-hmm. So to see how that all played out was pretty cool.
Yeah, I did enjoy that one. I might have to rethink whether that one goes on my honorable mentions or not. I did, because I did. I really did enjoy it.
And there are movies that you've been talking about that I'm like, oh, maybe that should have won.
Well, that's partially why we do these discussions. Yeah. Then we finalize it for our official website list. Because sometimes you just need to think about it again as you talk about it.
Like, so okay, just like, review 7-6-5 for me, Begonia, Thunderbolts, and Drop.
Okay. Number 7 for me was The Roses. And The Roses was a fun film. Crazy. It's a crazy film with Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman. And they are married. And it starts out kind of showing like how they got married and how they were, their romance, how everything went. And then the descent down to the point where they're like openly mocking each other, hate each other. All those type of things and how that plays out. And it's like, these are two fantastic actors. And so when you get two fantastic actors and you let them just kind of go nuts, it's great. And so from that standpoint, it's really fun. It is, there is an element of thought provoking nature to it of like how marriages can go bad or how things that start out well, relationships that start out well can descend over time and give you problems over time, and how if you don't work at them, you know, things can go badly. But it's at times very dramatic, at times it's very funny, at times it's very serious. So it was a quality film, the likes of which we don't get that often. So it was kind of that mixture of drama and comedy with two fantastic actors. So The Roses was quite good at number 7 for me. Number 6, Den of Thieves 2, Pantera. This one I said at the time, because it came out early in 2025, I was shocked at this movie, because it was one of those where I wanted to go see something in the theater, and the only thing in the theater that I might have even considered going was Den of Thieves 2, but I'd never seen Den of Thieves 1. So I watched the first movie and then went to the theaters to see this. The first movie was okay. It was fine. The second movie was great. Like, they did so much better job of character development, world building, story arcs. You liked the main characters better in this film than you liked the first one. The heist was interesting. The off play between the two characters, there was kind of a little bit of a Fast and Furious, the original very first movie vibe to some of it. And it was really well done. It was highly underrated. It's one of the most underrated movies I've seen in a while. It was much, much better than it deserved to be, honestly. And I said at the time, like, this movie is probably going to end up in my top 10. And here it is at number 6. So it held out. Now their, you know, competition for the rest of the year was not great, but it really was. So I would say, like, if you're interested in kind of a heist genre films, like, watch Den of Thieves just so that you can watch Den of Thieves 2. You do need to see the first one for the second one to make sense. The first one is okay, but the second one is much better. Number 5 for me was Tron Ares. And I really did like Tron Ares. I was disappointed, very disappointed. It did not do better than it did, because it really was a good movie. It was solid. I enjoyed their kind of take on the digital world in real life. The soundtrack, especially when you're in the IMAX theater, was awesome. Not quite Daft Punk, but you know, nothing is. I agree that I thought the concern was Jared Leto as lead. I thought he did great. Now, one thing to consider is, could the ceiling have been higher for that role had they picked another actor. That is possible. However, the concern was that Jared Leto would screw this up entirely because he's not particularly great as a lead man, and he did not.
Yeah.
So I liked his performance. I liked the understated nature of it. This is a film that I will watch again and again because the Tron films are awesome. So Tron: Ares, number 5 for me. All right, 4-3-2.
Number 4 for me is Wolfman.
Okay.
Which came out at the very beginning of the year, even though I was actually played its list together last night. My friend who I go to horror movies with said, we rated Wolfman really high. Like, I rated Wolfman 5 stars for my based against other horror
movies.
And I was just thinking back on why did I rate Wolfman 5 stars. And Wolfman is a really good movie for you to watch if you like drama or horror.
Yeah.
If you like both, it's probably a great movie for you to watch because it does a great job of telling an actual story. It's not just a scary movie.
Yeah.
It tells the story of a family who's going through a lot of struggles in the marriage, and just they are trying to escape as part of this. They're trying to escape different things by going out to this property that was owned by the guy's dad. And the way that they visually represented through audio the shifts in him as he started to have this character was unique. And I think that it's worth watching for anyone, really. I think if you like monster movies or scary movies, you might like it a little more. But it's definitely not a classic monster movie. And okay. I think those things like combined might be why it didn't get as much recognition as I think it deserved, because it's not the classic archetype of any of those genres. It's very much an amalgamation of several different ones, but ones that I like.
Yeah.
So that's why I liked it so much. And I think I need to watch it.
Nice.
Talk about it. Number 3 for me was Knives Out, Wake Up Dead. For me, I thought there, and we talked about this at length when we reviewed it, that I thought there was like a lot of important things to hear in that movie. Not necessarily that I agreed with all of them or the conclusions drawn from them, but there was a lot of stuff in there I thought was practical, helpful for people in the church, and just in general, how we view our world, how we interact with other people, and are you going to just hide and be angry, or are you going to, you know, try and actually engage with people? And I thought that was important. I just, like we talked about at the time, I think Rian Johnson did a good job of not being like playing his hand necessarily on like whether is this good or bad. Now some of the political stuff he was very pointed with, which come to expect from him. But overall, I thought it was a really good story, and probably I think the best Netflix movie I've seen so far. So that's why it's so high up on my list. And then number 2 for me was F1. I think at some point, if I were to sit down and make a list of my like top 10 sports movies, F1's got to be challenging to me in that list, which is something to say because I'm not necessarily a racing fan.
Yeah.
But F1, to me, did a better job at representing a sport than most of the sports movies I've seen. Because really, getting to know Formula One a little bit, every single race that races all over the world, every single race is kind of like a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Because it's like the biggest event in those cities every year.
Yeah.
And they did a phenomenal job showing that on screen and showing the like dedication that goes into getting the smallest detail just right so that your car can go just a little bit faster and you can win a race. They did a good job of showing that it's not necessarily always about winning the race in F1 when you're a part of the team.
Yeah.
It's about helping each other to achieve the best result for your team, which is a different concept than in a lot of other sports.
Yeah.
Something that's a little hard for people to grasp, so they don't know anything about racing. And I thought Brad Pitt was really good.
Yeah.
In the character that he played, aging guy who gets like the last chance. And I thought it was emotionally like understandable and relatable. It didn't seem over the top to me. It seemed like very real. Like I could see someone experiencing all these things as they're trying to integrate into that kind of culture. And I just really loved how it was shot.
Yeah.
Like Joseph Kaczynski and Abby
Harris
this year. This movie, it showcased all, because they filmed on all the tracks, and it showcased like the real cracks. So you got a real idea of, like, this is what these guys are actually going through. And it kind of gave me a lot more respect for, it's not just like cars driving around. Like, there is like some crazy stuff they have to plan for. Like, you got these huge hills they go up, you got these sweeping turns. Like, there's a lot to that sport that I don't know if I necessarily had a full appreciation for. So I think F1 just, I would say that it would be hard to make a better movie about the sport. So for me, that's a sign that's really good.
Yeah. Nice. Number four for me was The Amateur with Rami Malek, and another, you know, spy genre type movie. And I love that genre. This one was really good. He is, you know, his wife gets killed and he decides to go on a kind of a revenge mission, but he's not really the guy who's trained to do that. And so despite getting some training, he tries to tackle it his own way. So you have the interesting dynamic of someone who works in the intelligence agency, who's not like the James Bond type character, who is trying to go on a revenge tour and get justice for his murdered wife, but has to do it a different way than most of his colleagues, like most of the people in that genre would do it. And at the same time, he's got the bad guys chasing him and he's got the CIA chasing him as well. And so you have a fun dynamic there. Rami Malek is a good actor. And I just really liked the way this played out and the story and some of the interesting ways in which he kills people. And I enjoyed a different take. It was kind of a fresh take on a similar genre, which was kind of fun. Number three, I had F1. Again, fantastic movie. Really, really good. The top three for me were very, very solid movies. And I could quibble with the order of any of the top three for me, but I put F1 at number three. I've always liked racing movies far better than I like racing. Like, I don't ever watch racing ever, but I actually really like a lot of the movies that come out about racing. Again, Joseph Kaczynski might be the most underrated big movie director out there. I mean, most people don't know his name, but he has put out tremendously big films and good films. You know, I mean, Top Gun 2, like Top Gun Maverick, I should say, is one case. Like, everyone thinks about Tom Cruise, about that. Very few people think about Kaczynski.
Yeah.
But he's got a lot of movies that I really, really enjoy. He's a great, great director. Everything about this was great. The cinematography, the soundtrack, Hans Zimmer, of course. And just the action and the way it plays out. I very much enjoyed this film. I enjoyed the storyline behind it, the acting performances, the direction, the cinematography. It was, because I'm not an F1 guy, it was informative. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed getting to know a little bit more about the sport, which I felt like I did get to know more about it than I had previously. And so I thoroughly enjoyed F1. Probably the movie on this list that I've watched the most this year, because I think I've seen it 3 or 4 times, because I went to see it a couple times in theater because it was a fun theater experience. And I've watched it since it came out. It's on Apple TV Plus, or now just Apple TV. Drop the plus. Number two for me was Mission Impossible Final Reckoning. Very, very awesome conclusion to this, to the genre. I really thoroughly enjoyed this film. The only reason why it's not number one is because there are some plot issues, you know, when they're constantly doing writing on the fly, like they've been constantly redoing it, like you're not always going to get everything buttoned up. But I'm telling you, some of the best action sequences you will ever see. And I just, like, the tension on the scene when he goes down into that sub underwater, like that was so dramatic and so awesome. It was just amazing, amazing filmmaking. Tom Cruise going above and beyond again, you know, jumping from biplane to biplane, you know, those type of crazy things. I just really, really loved this movie and I thought it was a fitting conclusion for it. And I'm glad it came out and I'm glad I enjoyed it as much as I did. So Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, number two.
Number one for me was Sinners.
Sinners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just checks every box for me. Music, culture, core. It's just I love originality, and this movie has it in spades. One of the best, if not the best, versions of a guy playing two people at the same time I've seen on film. It really feels like they're two different people. Michael B. Jordan is underrated, I think.
I don't love him, but he is very good actor.
Yeah.
Like, I will give him that.
Especially in this movie, I think he's phenomenal. And I just love the soundtrack. Like, I listen to nothing but the soundtrack. I'm a big music person. So, I like that there's a variety of music on the soundtrack. If you watch the movie, there's some stuff like Celtic type stuff, and then there's the Deep South stuff, and there's a lot of history in the music. If you know anything about jazz and blues culture, I liked it so much because it was just a different experience.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible should. I don't know how I missed that. It'll be somewhere for sure.
Yeah.
But Sinners was my favorite movie either.
Excellent.
And I will say also that came out fairly early in the year, and he saw it. I said, I think that might be my favorite this year, and another week here this year. So.
Nice. Number one for me was Nuremberg.
Yeah.
Another Rami Malek film. Rami Malek and Russell Crowe square off against each other. Nazi trials and World War II. And the main thrust of it between those two was between the relationship between the characters, between Russell Crowe and Rami Malek. And Rami Malek plays a psychologist who's basically there to like keep the German prisoners sane, so to speak, so that they can actually conduct a trial for them. And the big fish that they captured, that they put on trial for this film, and I'm gonna get the name right on my character. Should be easier to look up on this than it seems to be at the moment. But now it's giving me all kinds of issues.
Was it Goering?
Goering. Hermann Goering.
Yeah.
Goering. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hermann Goering. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I got that right because I was like, I didn't think it's Goering, but yeah. So he plays Hermann Goering. So the back and forth between those two, as they build relationships, as they build trust, and they not trust, who's manipulating who. So there's a real deep psychological element as they're trying to build the case against these guys, and that what's at stake for the trials, what's at stake for the justice, what's at stake for the post-war world. It's really, really solid film. And I really like the back and forth between the two characters and the character interplay that's at stake. I think it goes off the rails just at the end, at the very end, but it's a really quality film and a good historical piece where I really haven't seen other movies around that specific topic. So I was glad to see it, and I thought it was really worthwhile. So Nuremberg comes in at number one for me. And Mission Impossible, Final Reckoning, and Nuremberg were the only ones I rated above 4 stars for the year. So there you go. All right, everyone. That is our top 10. And thank you for tuning into the Film for Fans podcast. Make sure you check out filmforfans.com, where hopefully get our final official lists out soon on filmforfans.com. Until next time, like, subscribe, tell your friends, and enjoy the movies.